Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop Backstage Pass, Metal Shop Podcast, and Metal Shop. We're talking with Kyle Beam from Undeath, Rochester, New York. Death metal band coming out with Lesions of a Different Kind, their first record on Prosthetic Records. First off, how are you doing, man? How's it going over there in New York? How are you staying busy, staying sane during these COVID pandemic times?
Well, over in New York, we are doing good. You know, infection rates are down still, and the weather's been nice. Hasn't been too hot, hasn't been too cold, so it's been chill. And well, I mean, you know, everyone's got a lot of time on their hands right now, including myself. So I was able to really get down and dirty working on a second LP and getting all that stuff done and planning out some like live stream shows and stuff and whatever. So just the usual.
Wait, okay. So hold on a second. Is this Lesions of a Different Kind? Is this your first LP or is this your second?
This is the first one.
So you're already working on a second.
I may or may not have to keep that way under wraps. Not sure, but yeah, it's getting near completion. So
you're pulling a full Tomb mold, dude. You're going to have like three records in a year. What the hell? That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what the label thinks about it.
Well, speaking of the label, man, let's talk about that. You guys, pretty relatively underground death metal band. You get hooked up with Prosthetic, and Prosthetic's a big label. I mean, most notably, Lamb of God was on Prosthetic. Some big bands on there. They're signing up some really rad bands. What got you on the radar of Prosthetic, and how did that process go?
Well, you know, they just reached out on Instagram. I got to be honest. They followed us,
yeah.
And we were all just kind of joking. Like, it'd be so crazy if they like reached out, and lo and behold, only a couple minutes later they did. And so Steve Joe was the one who reached out to me from Prosthetic. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, Steve is the man. I have yet to meet him in person, but from all interactions I've ever had, he is totally the man.
Yeah, my friend JJ, who sang for Seven Horns, Seven Eyes, and he did does vocals for Necrotheoi, or however you say it. He loves that dude. He says he speaks praise of that guy. So,
okay, very cool. Hell yeah, that's good to know. But I asked him like, how did you find us or whatever? And he was like, yeah, I just saw you guys on some Blogspot and checked it out. I thought it was killer. So that's really, you know, that's it.
He's checking for it. Cool, man. So he's obviously plugged in, and, that's rad. Well, that sounds pretty easy, dude.
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
So obviously we're in a time right now where no one can like play shows and really, I mean, responsibly, other than obviously the live stream thing and whatnot. Would you guys be on tour right now, or would you guys be gearing up to support in a regular timeline?
We were going to be, you know what? We might actually be on tour right now. I know that we had a just over a month long tour. I'm not sure if I can say who we were going to open for, but we were supposed to do like a full North American market tour. And, that would have been awesome. It would be right after the album came out and just like hitting every single city, you know what I mean? And getting people who've never heard you before to hear you and whatever. So yes, we would have been on tour probably just like everybody else. And now no one's on tour and it totally sucks.
What are some different ways that you can kind of like keep people's interest then, aside from touring? I'm imagining just doing as many interviews, doing press, and do you, you know, stay active on social media? Anything out of the box that you guys are trying?
Oh, geez, I don't know if we're doing anything out of the box. Wish we were, but I mean, just, you know, keeping up a presence on social media, mm-hmm. keeping your, like, the faces of the band out there. And so when people, and like you just said, like press and all that kind of stuff, like that stuff is really important. Just like any kind of articles that say, like, you know, what's your favorite three albums or whatever, and a picture of your face, just like anything to get people, they hear the name, they see the name Undeath, they see the artwork, and then they click through. They see you as the band. That shit, you know, like when you can't get out there and be touring and have your face up on the stage and whatever, like this is the next best thing, I guess. So that stuff has been really important for us during quarantine.
Nice, man. It sounds about right. And so I'm curious about the name Undeath. So it's simple, but it's like memorable. Everyone loves death, right? Now we're Undeath. Who came up with the name?
So, I mean, in the beginning, it was just Matt, the drummer, and I.
Okay.
And, God, we must have went through 50 names before deciding on Undeath. Because, yeah, like you said, it's, you know, we wanted something short and snappy and memorable.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm trying to think of some ones that we had before. They were really, really ridiculous. I think the closest one that wasn't Undeath was Reliquary. But okay. Just not quite a used enough word, you know, like it's snappy, but it's not like doesn't have the word death in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten more either for having our name have death in the title.
Well, I mean, there's Blood Incantation, which has incantation in the title. So, I mean,
yeah, bro, yeah. If I'm going to be honest with you, that was like I was like, yeah, if they can do it, it's totally fine.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, no, just, you know, average name story. Just needed something good.
Yeah.
And just something to go with that didn't give me horrible goosebumps all over my body when I had to say it out loud.
It's no, like, Ashes Winter of the Dawning Sorrow's Demise or something.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, bro.
So let's go back a little bit. What was your first album of purchasing on your own, with your own money? Even if it's embarrassing, mine was no doubt Tragic Kingdom. So I'm not some like, you know, cool kid with like a freaking, you know, CD or something. It was no doubt Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about you, dude?
My very, very first CD that I remember buying, it definitely was a CD as well, was, it was either The Remedy by Seether or Down with the Sickness by Disturbed. I must have been fifth or sixth grade.
Okay.
Very young. Spent my allowance on that shit. But yeah, exactly, bro. I mean, that's a horrible album in retrospect, but geez, that really started up. Cause it wasn't long after that, you know, I was like listening to that kind of stuff and Slipknot and whatever.
Dude,
and
it's a gateway.
Someone was like, yeah, dude,
yeah,
exactly. And someone was like, you got to check out death metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, and also, dude, that No Doubt record's pretty good.
I still listen
way
to
better
it.
Than
it's
Down
great.
With the Sickness.
Oh, I
yeah.
love it. Well, okay, so No Doubt was actually my first band t-shirt also. I got it from Target. My mom got it for me. What was the first band t-shirt you ever had?
Oh, very first one I ever had?
Yep.
I definitely think that it was, I'm pretty sure it was a Slipknot shirt, and I'm pretty sure that it was, oh my God, whatever the album would like Spit It Out on it.
It's
got like
some
wacky cover. I can't remember.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now, these days I have way too many band t-shirts. I'm actually looking at them right now. It's kind of ridiculous, but it's okay. You know, I could think of other addictions that would be much worse off. What's your, like a few of your most prized band t-shirts that you have?
Oh, easy. My very, very top prize shirt is a, oh my God, hold on. It's a Wretched Spawn tour shirt.
Nice.
From, it's killer. I did not attend that tour. I was like 6 years old or something.
Sure.
But, my girlfriend picked this up for me and I just love that shirt to death. It's like got a few riffs in the arm pit hole, but I never wear it.
That's
I only
distressed.
Wear it for like special occasions.
There you Oh, special occasions. That's right. Hey, I have some Metallica shirts that are like the Wherever I May Roam tour shirts I got at Value Village, or Savers as they would call it, probably, thrift stores. And those are like special occasion shirts because they're white and they're beat up. I'm like, okay, these.
Oh, that's fire, bro. That's flame.
Yeah. So I definitely only bust those out for rare occasions. So Wretched Spawn, anything else that really comes to mind?
Yeah, you know, I actually, Autopsy just repressed, or reprinted, I should say, Severed Survival.
Nice.
Original cover, long sleeves. Yeah, and I pick one of those up. That one is, like, almost a daily wear still for, like, the last 3 months. Even when it's too hot, I'm just like, dude, I gotta rep. That's one of my favorite albums of all time. And my last one, this is gonna sound stupid. It's gotta be the first Undeath long sleeve we ever did, the Crushing the King Skull long sleeve. I really like that one.
Hey, dude, if you can't represent your own, if you can't like get behind your own band and think that you like you love it and your long sleeve is awesome, then why should we? So I totally represent.
I agree
totally
with
love
you.
That.
But yeah, those are my top three. I could go on if you want.
No, it's all good, man. Let's talk a little bit about what got you into the underground death metal stuff. So you kind of start with the nu metal. That's your gateway into more metal. And then what was like your first foray into like underground metal? And maybe like what was your first band that really blew your mind? And then did you get to go to any like local shows or anything?
Sure, dude. All right, I got it. Okay, let me go on for a second here.
Sure.
So my very first death metal band I ever heard was At the Gates. It was Slaughter of the Soul.
Yes, classic.
Still one of my favorites. Yeah, dude. And honestly, go for yourself if you don't like that album. I hate people that don't like that album.
Dude,
but,
so good.
Okay, so that was real early on. That was like sixth grade, and then I got into Cannibal Corpse. And,
mm-hmm.
and to be honest with you, when I was a kid, I never really got into like super underground stuff. I really liked like Decapitated. But still like big bands that were on like pretty major labels.
Sure.
And then when I was like older, like a teenager, I got way more into like underground, like punk and hardcore and like indie, like DIY, like basement shows, like anyone who would play.
Yeah.
And, so I was really into that kind of culture for a long time, still into metal and everything. But I gotta be honest with you, until I was like 19, and living in a city, because I grew up in the middle of nowhere on the country. All my neighbors are Mennonites and cows and Amish people.
Yeah.
So I moved to a city, going to college, and I realized that, you know, there's actually this crazy underground metal scene, and, like, all the bands are awesome. You know what I mean? So it was only probably 7 years ago that I really got into that kind of thing. But I don't know. You know, it's cool. It's a good thing.
Dude, I mean, some of those bands you mentioned are... It's funny because, you know, we're so in the weeds with metal it's funny that you mentioned like Decapitated or something is quote unquote more mainstream, whereas like a casual fan of just like rock and roll music would be like, whoa, that's super underground and brutal. But then whereas,
yeah,
you know,
they were on like Relapse.
It's funny that like, you know, a band, people will be like, oh, you like Cannibal Corpse? It's sellout. It's like, no, actually in the realm of things, it's still pretty underground, dude.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
But
and
there's like elitists,
another
you know?
Thing is like, yeah, dude, totally. Those people honestly have probably never worked hard at doing music in their lives, because I'll tell you, Cannibal Corpse probably works about 50 times harder to make their shit happen than like anyone else. That's why that happens for them. And they gotten them along the way a few times, but
hell yeah.
So I would never hate on Cannibal Corpse.
So you what got you into actually like playing music?
Oh, I've been playing music for my whole life, basically. I started on French horn in elementary school and
okay.
chorus and stuff.
Yeah.
I started playing bass guitar when I was 13 or something, 13, 14.
Yeah.
And I just kind of got into that. I really enjoyed playing bass guitar, practiced as much as I could. And then I realized, like, I wanted to go to school for music, but... I wanted to go to school for music education originally, and there's not many music education programs in the country that offer electric instruments,
mm-hmm.
like as a main instrument. So I had to learn double bass. I only started playing double bass about a year before I went to college. I never was that good at it, but that was a huge thing for me. You know, you learn a lot when you go to school for music, or you go to school for anything, you're going to learn a lot about it. And like double bass is a really cool instrument. no frets or anything. Like, it's a really, really expressive instrument. There's about a million sounds that can come out of it.
Yeah.
Really good for learning, like, string pedagogy on. So I started playing electric guitar when I was, like, 20. And that was pretty much, I was like, damn, this is badass. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
so I was pretty much went, like, I was playing double bass a lot. I just stopped practicing. I would just play guitar all the time. Then I started writing music, and then that's it, I guess, you know? Just, like, kept doing that for this whole time until now.
Well, okay, so before Undeath, did you do any other bands? Were you in any, like, kind of projects before Undeath that maybe didn't take off or were kind of just, like, you know, your own kind of projects?
Tons. Or not, I shouldn't say tons, but, you know, I was in, like, a bunch of bands in college with my friends, and just like a lot of like indie rock. Like we lived in this house together, me and my buddies, and we'd have shows like every single night, and like our bands would play. I mean, nothing, just like indie rock. I don't know if anyone listening to this podcast would want to listen to them, but they're fun. They're all right. Yeah. Really good excuse to get super fucking drunk.
There you go.
But no, Undeath is really my first foray into being a band that doesn't play in your basement.
Yeah.
Like playing, even just playing at bars, like I maybe have played before I started Undeath almost three years ago now. I'd played a bar one time. I'd never played a venue with monitors. So that's always an experience.
That's cool, man. I'm curious about kind of like what we're experiencing right now is kind of like a new wave of old school death metal, or like kind of old school, you know, influenced death metal. Is that a real thing, or am I just making that up?
Nah, dude, I think that's totally a real thing. People would maybe want to disagree with you because they don't think that it's cool to like say that and that it's like a trend or like whatever. But I mean,
I don't know about a trend, but a movement more so.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, I look at it this way. Almost all of the like bands in the OSDM thing right now are almost all around like my age. They're like mid to late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that like we all grew up on that kind of music. Like, you know, like we listened to like old Cannibal Corpse records and Morbid Angel when we were kids, and not like Despised Icon or like Suicide Silence. I don't know. At least I'm talking for me. It's just like, this is the music that I like.
Yeah.
And also it's like, why the hell, that music is so good. You know what I mean? Like old school, late 80s, early 90s death metal is so good. The songwriting is just killer. Like the songs take precedent over everything. Like the riffs are really important and everything. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know why people stop making that kind of music. And we're like, actually everything's got to sound like in Suffocation or like, and I love Suffocation. I'm just saying like, I'm not sure why every band decided they need to be like brutal death metal or have like deathcore breakdowns or whatever. So I think it's just a return to form.
Fair enough.
You know, everyone's just trying to make good songs and good riffs.
I did an interview with John McKenty from Incantation, and I kind of asked him a question about that, like the new wave of death metal, and he was super stoked on it. He was like, "Hey man, if people consider us, you know, he's like us a moderately underground band, I think I would say they are kind of more of forefathers of that sound." But he was being very kind of
humble.
Yes, he was being very humble and just said like, "Hey man, if people care about my band and are like look to us as inspiration, then he was very happy about it." And he even like shouted out some bands. He was like, "Yeah, I really like that Mortiferum record, Blood Incantation and stuff." So it's really cool to
see.
That's
so cool, dude.
Yeah, very cool. So on the subject of death metal, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, but we all know the like quote unquote big four of American thrash metal: Slayer, Anthrax, Metallica, and Megadeth. If I were to sit you down and force you to create a big four of death metal, and this doesn't have to be American death metal, just big four of death metal for you personally, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to check every box, just you personally, what are your big four of death metal?
All right, big four. And I'm going to go at this less from a personal thing and more from like maybe an album sales thing. I'm going with Cannibal Corpse.
Okay.
Going with Morbid Angel.
Yep.
And that's, you know, not Morbid Angel currently because I don't know if they sell that many records anymore. But so Cannibal Corpse, Morbid Angel, Suffocation's definitely on there, and probably, oh, the last one is always the biggest pain in the ass. I'm just going to say, I'm going with Obituary.
Okay.
I mean, they're a band that they're still kicking. They still play huge shows. You know what I mean?
Right on, man. So that's a good list. And you could go on and on and on, man. That's the beautiful thing about it. You could say Deicide. You could say Death. You could say Autopsy.
Right, right.
So many.
All of those were going to be there. Carcass, I was just going for ones that are like, they played giant shows in 1993, and they're still playing giant shows.
There you go.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question, and you don't have to try. You don't have to make any enemies here if you want to skirt around this topic or anything. But, you know, we both talked about T-shirts. We both talked about our love of T-shirts and everything. What is your opinion on the prevalence of bootleg T-shirts? Bootleg T-shirts online.
They're cool. I don't really have an issue. You know, my band's not big enough to get bootlegged. So
okay.
If someone was bootlegging my I'm not sure how I'd feel, man. That's like, I wouldn't be mean. I wouldn't, like, sue them. I might say, like, hey, can you send me a couple of those?
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Bootlegging, that's one thing. Do you know, I hate to derail this. Do you know CoolShirts42069 on Instagram?
I don't. What's that?
So it's this dude. He's my buddy Dylan from Ohio. He just basically buys band shirts in bulk from a merch store and then tie dyes them in really cool ways. Like he's really, really good at and resells them.
Okay.
So some people take issue with that, which I couldn't believe. It's like, so he's putting $400 per order in like the band and merch company's pocket.
Yeah.
And like someone's going to have a problem with that. Whereas bootlegging is different because they're not buying the T-shirt and they are potentially making profit off of an image that isn't theirs. I'm not sure. I don't know. I have plenty of bootleg T-shirts.
Oh, me too.
I wear them all the time, you know? Yeah. So, one way I feel like it's a butt.
But I mean,
I'm sorry, you go ahead, man.
I probably have plenty of bootleg CDs too, so it's all good, man. I mean, I guess it's not all good, but, you know, I want the product, and some of those bands don't make the T-shirts in, you know, those designs.
That's the
anymore,
other thing.
So.
That's the other thing, too, dude. That's the other thing is like bootleggers these days, they know, like, yeah, I'm going to make this fly ass design that everyone wants because the band's not doing it. And to me,
on better quality shirts.
So that's the thing. How much issue can you take when you're not delivering, like, actual good merch? So I guess that's where I would be. It's like, I hope that the merch that I'm selling people want to buy over the bootleggers because I keep the stocks or the stuff in stock. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Hey man, competition breeds like creativity. So, you know, you got people outside, you know, bootlegging your stuff. You better make designs that people want to buy it better.
That's exactly how I feel, dude. That's exactly how I feel.
I remember,
lawsuits do not make creativity.
I remember I follow the a singer of that hardcore band, that kind of melodic hardcore band, H2O, on either Twitter or Instagram, and Toby, the singer, posted some pictures of down in Mexico. Apparently, bootlegging is, like, super big, and H2O, they were playing with some other big punk bands, and they said that there was, like, a merch, like, mall of bootleggers outside the store, and he was like, yo, they have way cooler shirts than we do. I had to buy some. They have, like, way cooler stuff. What the hell? We want to get these shirts.
So exactly, that's the thing. Yeah, and it's like, how mad can you be, dude? So the dude made $100. It doesn't really matter, I guess.
If you know, you want to look at it that way, it's kind of like, well, you know, you made it when people care enough to.
That's so true as well, dude. You know, like there's a positive spin on it all. Truly, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to be like, oh,
exactly
that.
You're listening to the new merch and streetwear podcast featuring Kyle Beam. Okay, so here's a question. If you had to start a podcast not related to music that you felt like you could, you know, dive deep into, you know, people like a true crime, sports podcast, anything like that, what's something that you feel like you could have a conversation about, at least like weekly or biweekly, with a friend? What kind of podcast would you do?
Dark
not
Souls.
Music. Dark Souls. Okay, a Dark Souls podcast.
Oh, hell yeah. You know what, actually, you said it can't be related to music, but I had this idea where I'd get metal musicians who play Dark Souls on, we'd fight a boss while I'm interviewing them.
Oh, that's awesome.
But
it's not music related enough. That's fair enough. You're talking with musicians, but you're playing Dark Souls. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Are you a Twitch streamer?
No, dude, my laptop is from like 2002. I can't stream on Twitch, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
Wish.
So I know this is a little bit off the topic, but you guys are not touring and you're not like a huge mainstream, rock band or anything. So I'm assuming you probably have to have a day job. What's your day gig? What's your quote unquote real gig?
Jeez, well, I've been doing prep at restaurants.
Okay.
And like washing dishes, just any kind of bull job. They'll hire you without any experience at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Although I haven't been working during the pandemic, but that's what I do. I just do back of house bull and play the guitar. And that's it.
Right on, man.
Not very exciting.
No, it's you know what? It pays the bills and it's a job that allows you, it finances your music addiction, right?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. And food service is a great job because food service is horrible. Don't get me wrong. It just sucks every day. But you get to take time off.
Absolutely.
Anytime you need.
Absolutely, man. Winding down a little bit, this record is coming out, again, Lesions of a Different Kind. You've released some singles. It's coming out October 23rd on Prosthetic. Was there any discussion about, like, holding off until the pandemic, like, subsided? Or were you like, we got to get this out when we can?
I don't know if waiting was ever on the table. Like, we never discussed it. The album was slated to come out this year and we were wrapping it up and the post-production kind of took a little bit longer because of coronavirus and our guy had to like move all around the damn country and whatever. And so that held it up a bit, but no, I don't know if waiting was ever, I think it was always going to come out. And it is like a little bit of an experiment, because it's like, who the hell's ever released an album during a pandemic before, but so far it's going okay.
Right on, man. So what, just give me a couple, maybe a couple words you could use to describe the record if people, are listening to this kind of going in blind.
Sure. To me, I think first word, diverse. I definitely think it's a really diverse record. It's not a death metal record where every song is in the same key or every song just like a 6/8 in 230 BPM or something. Like there's lots of different kinds of songs. There's fast songs, there's slow songs, there's like the obviously really singly verse chorus songs, there's like longer songs. And it's got riffs, it's got a load of riffs. I'd love to count them all up sometime.
That's great.
That's all I got to say. It's just not quite your average death metal record, I'd say, but totally still very death metal.
I dig it, man. So, my last question for you, dude, if you could pick a scar on your body, and tell us the story of how you got it.
Oh, geez. So I was doing back of house stuff. I was slicing up prosciutto on a big meat slicer and I just sliced the tip of my thumb off.
Oh!
And it was horrible. And then so the next day, though, we were going to play our like third show ever. It was at Brooklyn Bazaar.
Yeah.
And like Trevor Sternad from Black Dahlia Murder was there. And I just like had this big like Band-Aid on my thumb and it was like really hard to play. But it turned out to be a fine show. Very stressful, though.
Dude, that's gnarly. Speaking of Trevor Sternad, that guy is so down for underground music and underground death metal. That guy's like a champion of the underground.
He is the man. Trevor is one of like literally the nicest and most genuine people I've ever met. I've only met him for like a couple minutes at a time, but he is totally the man. He was one of our very earliest supporters, like to be honest with you. And like,
awesome.
He came out to like all like our New York shows. And yeah, he's the man. Love Trevor, dude. And you're right. He is a huge proponent of the underground.
That's so cool, man. It's cool to see him because, he doesn't have to do that. His band is huge. He doesn't have to be reaching to the underground, and he still buys CDs. I interviewed him. He's one of the people that still loves buying those physical CDs and supporting bands. He doesn't have to do that, but the fact that he uses his platform to support such underground metal is like, dude, that is a guy who loves metal.
Yeah, dude, and who else do you know in a band that big that's that connected? You know what I mean?
No one.
Like, that knows every new band. Like, Trevor knows every new band. Have you heard Trevor's new band also?
No.
All right, you might... This is pre-recorded. You might have to edit this out because I think that it's... Never mind. I don't know if I should say that. I can't remember if he's using a secret name. It's on Caligari. That's what I'll tell you.
Okay, sounds good, man. all right, dude. So any... actually, one last question for you. What's the best way to support you guys that, you know, the money goes directly to you guys?
Well, you can find all of our releases on Bandcamp. All money from the first two demos, if you buy them digitally, you don't have to buy them. They're pay what you want. Give no money, give a dollar, give $5, doesn't matter. Don't give more than $5 because you're crazy if you do that. So that's you can support us very directly by buying the demos digitally. You can pre-order the record on Bandcamp as well. CDs. And if you want to find our merch, the main store we use is Holy Mountain. Yeah. Occasionally, we'll do shirts through Inferno Screen Printing. And we just opened a European store with Evil Greed. Or I think it's going to open very soon. So if you're in Europe and you want to get some merch without crazy shipping costs, hit them up.
Right on, man. Well, thanks very much for the interview. Any final words for the Seattle and Northwest audience?
Oh, keep music in schools.
I like that.
That's it.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.